So the reality is, it's very difficult when you're in the moment to know which one of these two is the better option. And I think that is some soul searching you are doing almost on a daily basis as an entrepreneur until things pick up.
If you want to get stuff done, then you have come to the right place. This is the Get Stuff Done podcast, brought to you in association with RDI Worldwide, a weekly interview series with prominent and diverse people from around the world who will share their own unique insights on what it takes to get stuff done and their personal strategies for doing so. My name is Gordon Dudley, the creator of the Get Stuff Done project and host of this podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. We hope you enjoy this episode and would love to hear your feedback anytime. Let's get stuff done.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Get Stuff Done podcast. I'm joined today by Kunal Bhagat, who is a consumer tech entrepreneur with a successful exit. He built, sold, and indulged beverages, a category leader in the single-serve coffee tea space in India. He began his career working in investment banking for Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, and also Barclays Capital, and has a substantial track record in private equity at Dar Capital, originating transactions in excess of $2 billion cumulative. He was also the chief executive officer of Vida Acquisition Corp, an edtech focused in SPAC, and most recently was heading up the setup of a $1 billion plus family office, as well as serving on the board of some other companies. He has also worked with the chairman of Education First and served as a director in some other organizations as well. He holds an MBA from INSEAD, and I think that he has an immense amount to talk to us today about getting stuff done, which is why I wanted to have him as a guest. So, Kunal, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Gordon, thanks for having me.
You know, getting stuff done is often just about getting started. I mean, it's similar to what we were talking about with fitness, and again with here is that starting, that like you can have the perfect plan, but the one thing that's certain is that plan is going to be affected, you know, over time, and will not be the perfect plan that you make now as time goes by.
Yeah.
And therefore there's no such thing as a perfect plan in reality. Yeah. And much better is to get started and learn along the way and alter and adapt like you've explained. So that's
I know it's supposed to be more you asking me questions, but I was just wondering how does this sort of relate to what your entrepreneurial experience was? Did you end up having a similar sort of experience? Was it tough to raise funding? Was it tough to get customers in initially? How was your journey? I'm curious.
Thank you for asking. I'm happy to also have questions from time to time. For me, I was going into an area that I had not worked in full time at all professionally. And I was doing it in a country that was foreign to me, where I did not speak the language fluently. And so I took some time off of work and I gave myself a very fixed timeline. So it was 150 days of a leave that I took from my job at the time. And that was my time that I was going to decide whether this business is go or no go. Is it viable or not? And I did everything I could within that time to make the best decision I could by the end of that 150 days, whether I think that it's going to be able to take off or not. And so what I did is I actually had a kind of a notepad. And I started with 150 written on that. And every day that passed by, I flipped it over. So it was going down. So I kept myself very time aware that time was running out on this on this 150 days. I mean, because 150 days in some sense is a long time. You can do a lot in 150 days.
Yes.
On the other hand, it's a few months, and you can absolutely allow a few months to pass by and get nothing done. Time is that kind of unusual friend of ours. And so I got to the end of that 150 days and I felt confident enough, with also the backing of another friend of mine who was going to relocate to Korea and join me to start. So we were going into it together. That gave me some additional confidence that we could start it. And so that's how we started. 2016, I went back to the company and resigned, and we started preparing to establish the entity and go from there.
And did it take you long to start getting customers?
Well, we were very aware that we are in a B2B space where the lead time is significantly longer than if we were in the B2C side. And so what we did is we actually went to a slightly less lucrative business, which was on the corporate training side of things, because we mm-hmm. could get customers more, you know, it was a lower ticket value. So we were able to get customers quicker that way. And our idea was that we would get in with the customers in this one service and then grow the wallet share into the other more lucrative ones. Turns out that synergy between the two services was non-existent.
Ah.
We really failed to convert customers from one to another. And so over the course
of... That's surprising. I also understand why you would have made that leap of logic.
Yes, but just a different decision-making, purchase decision, a different budget allocation, even though it comes under the umbrella of HR. Hiring and talent acquisition is just so much closer to the business and what the business needs, whereas L&D, professional development, corporate training is so much more usually for organizations. If there is excess budget or left remaining budget, then let's allocate it to that. It's not unfortunately to say, it's not usually a decision that companies very consistently and constantly allocate budget to that. And so and so that's where it became, like I say, not a synergy of the two services, and we had to run them a little bit separately in that way.
But you continued with both streams of both work streams.
We did, until COVID came along and hit us with a sledgehammer, like I think most people, especially small businesses, where all of a sudden there was no in-person training, there was no regional training happening for organizations in Korea. And so the training business just evaporated overnight. And that's
It didn't move online.
It moved online, but our belief was in experiential-based training, in very much the outcomes that are achieved by people co-locating and experiencing training together in the same space. And so that's where we then we pivoted into more of the recruitment, because it's pandemic-proof in that sense.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's like you said, adjusting and you know, going down different avenues that we didn't expect as they present themselves. I think textbook wise, it's called emergent strategy, which is just a nice way of saying being flexible and taking things as it comes.
But you know, on, and I'm guessing it's the same for every topic, there's so much information out there, and there's so much that people tell you in terms of platitudes and dogmas that you must follow, right? And which one is true and which one isn't. For example, when you become an entrepreneur, they keep saying, oh, this guy, and they you know, they're constantly showing you stories of someone who was persistent for 20 years and then finally made it. Then on the other hand, you even hear, when you find you're on the wrong train, get off at the first stop. So the reality is, it's very difficult when you're in the moment to know which one of these two is the better option. And I think that is some soul searching you're doing almost on a daily basis as an entrepreneur, until things pick up. Do I need to get off, or do I need to be persistent at this stage? And it's almost impossible to tell. Hindsight is 20/20, of course, but in the moment, it's impossible.
I think you're absolutely right. And that's why I always have a lot of respect for people who have set up their own businesses and gone off on their own, because that feeling of, at the one moment, being able to do anything and nothing at the same time is you can only really fully appreciate that when you're sitting and it's all yours and it's your business and you're trying to get things going. I certainly took a lot of learnings away. And again, and like you said, hindsight is 20/20. It's beautiful to be able to look back and say, you know, if we had done that differently, or, you know, if we had known that at the time, but you simply can't. So
if you had that kind of, you know, if you could tell the future, then there's no point in being an entrepreneur. Just invest in the stocks you know are going to rise. So the reality is, you know, you can only work on the information you have in the moment.
Absolutely. Kunal, I'm also always very interested in the like global business, cross-cultural dynamics of doing business with different cultural backgrounds, people from different areas of the world. And I'm curious to know for you along the way, how have you been able to develop, you know, let's say an effectiveness when dealing with people from different areas of the world or very different backgrounds?
That's a really interesting question, actually. You know, I think, and this is something which a lot of people don't realize, I think coming from India, we are sort of used to this from day one. And I'll tell you why. My father was in the army and I moved around all over India. And as you know, say neighboring China, where most people are of a similar ethnicity, India is vastly different. It's like if EU was one country, right? So there is dramatic cultural differences between different parts of the country in terms of, mm-hmm. and it even goes down to things like language, religion, culture, you know, cuisine, everything is different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we somehow or the other instinctively build a way to network and navigate. So sorry, not network, navigate around these issues and get people to pull together in the same direction. And I think when you take it into an international setting, it's pretty much the same. And I have to say that there have been clashes. Like I remember, and when I was at INSEAD, we had to, and that was my first foreign exposure. We had to work in a group, and there was a girl in my group called Jessica. In fact, we just made up earlier this year. We really clashed. She's very different from me. She was very upper class English, came, you know, with an Oxbridge background, a different set of life experience, different set of expectations. And my background was dramatically different from hers. And it was, I think we really struggled to understand each other despite our best efforts. And, you know, and now when we met each other very recently, we realized we both wanted probably the same thing. We just went about it the wrong way or a different way. Wrong way is not, it's just different approaches. And we made up, and it was really great to see that we still cared a lot about each other, that it bothered both of us for so many years that we could have been nicer to the other person.
Right.
And I think that's it. I think it, so over these kind of experiences, you learn to deal with it. I still remember when I started work with Barclays Capital, and my first boss, an incredible guy, I learned a lot from him, Fergus MacDonald. And one fine day, it was time for my review. And I asked him, Fergus, what can I do better? He said, no, you're doing everything well. I like the way you are developing technically, this. And I'm like, there has to be something I can improve because nobody's perfect. How can I get better if you don't point out my flaws? But, you know, him being very British was very reticent to say anything negative. After a lot of... lot of prodding, he finally said, I have to be honest, Kunal, half the time I have no clue what you're saying. I can't understand your accent, but when you send it to me in written, it's all fine. So okay. But I understood. And then I was chatting with my, you know, there's a very close friend of mine, Brazilian girl, and she was also from INSEAD. She used to sit next to me in the pod, and I asked her, you know, Fergus doesn't understand me, do you understand me? She says, completely, it's him I can't understand. And we burst out laughing. It's, you know, we're all of us coming from different parts of the world.
Yep.
It's astonishing whose accent, who struggled with. I think if you're just a little bit more empathetic towards each other, I think it's easy to navigate these minor challenges. And you find that most people, especially in a very professional setting like banking, private equity, etc., are very highly educated and very highly motivated.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the cultural differences are not as stark as they would be in, say, a manufacturing setup.
Okay.
And I have not generally found it to be a challenge.
Okay. That's interesting to hear. You mentioned about the business opportunity you saw in India with single service. So obviously, you know, a sense of kind of arbitrage in the market of that particular product. Do you perceive anything existing similar when it comes to what we were just discussing about navigating multicultural business, that there is in some ways an arbitrage through people that can be exploited? Maybe that's too strong a word, but at least taken advantage of. I'm curious whether you've perceived that in any way?
I have the answer for this. I'm trying to see if I don't cross any legal boundaries. So some, as you know, in this family office I was running, there was a particular individual who crossed lines, which he shouldn't have crossed. In fact, very, very broad, strong, bold lines were crossed. And one of the reasons why he managed to perpetuate that over years, and it was going on long before I came and I was the one who uncovered the wrongdoing, was because most of the investors for that particular project were abroad in Canada. And this particular project was in an Eastern European jurisdiction. And he made it out to be very complex and requiring a lot of local touch, a lot of involvement of the local authorities, government, etc., and ways to finesse that arrangement with these people. And that he was indispensable and it could only be done because he had all those connections. And the reality is this country is as law-abiding as any other country in the West. It's not a black box. The procedures are laid out in black and white. You follow them. It works. It helps to have a local lawyer who keeps you on the right side of the law. But he managed to pull the wool over the investors' eyes for years because they just thought this particular jurisdiction is a black box, and he managed to take advantage of that to the detriment of the investor.
Yeah, I guess that is one opportunity that he perceived and took advantage of. And I think I've also in the past heard similar things when it comes to doing business in Korea. Leaders and senior executives saying no need to get involved here. We've got everything covered. It, you know, things are done differently here. You wouldn't understand. It sounds like a similar kind of rhetoric, which is done. Whereas of course, you know, on the other hand, it doesn't take long for people when they do get in there and get on the ground to see how things really are. I have another friend who I definitely should be careful about naming, but let's say one of the world's most famous consumer brands globally, and everybody knows this brand, and he was tasked to try to uncover what was happening in that local branch, and it turned out he had a tip off about a very relatively small discrepancy in the numbers. And as he dug deeper, he uncovered more and more and more, and he found that there was a, he could definitely write a book. Now he's left that organization, so maybe he might. But he could write a book about that type of thing.
I could write a book about my experiences. Trust me, it was an eye opener, because you know most of us, the vast majority, work in environments with fairly sanitized, and people are genuine, hardworking, driven, and on the right side of the law, by and large, and have integrity. By and large, most people have integrity, right?
Yeah.
So once in a while, when it comes, I think it takes a while to wrap your head around that, and then you have to look at it from a completely different gaze, and I think a different perspective. And I think that's what we don't do. Could I have discovered this a month earlier? Probably. But you keep giving people the benefit of the doubt because you don't want to imagine the worst of people.
For sure. That's what they take advantage of, right?
Exactly.
It's the starting point for most people is integrity and transparency as a given, and that's what they definitely take advantage of, for sure. And in terms of where you have kind of developed your personal brand, when it comes to business, do you continue to take kind of active steps to kind of manage your personal brand? Is it something that you think about, I'd like to hear your perspectives on that.
Look, I think this has become a complex topic these days because of the advent of social media, right? I mean, is my personal brand what I put out on LinkedIn? So let me backstep. Earlier, your personal brand was basically what your professional network said about, not even professional, your professional contacts. That is people you worked with, your underlings, you know, your people who are reporting to you, people you reported to, your customers. Yeah. That was, and that word of mouth was your professional brand. And I would like to say that that remains strong. Like, one of the opportunities that I'm in serious discussion with at the moment, I was referred to by my former boss in, from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. You know, one of the people who put money into, who wanted to invest in the second startup that Elena and I were going to do in 2018 was also a former boss from one of the banks. So I think there is, that to me is very encouraging that I, that they, yeah, they thought so highly of me that they would recommend me,
for sure.
You know, outside to their network, they would want to back me with capital. So I think that's what I focused on when building my professional brand. Of course, now, should I take a more active look on how to manage it and on social media is something I've been considering, but I haven't as yet taken any concrete steps towards that direction.
Okay.
And that concrete steps in that direction, to be honest.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think you've described it very well. Usually it's how people would describe you in a professional context, or what is their perception of you, but yeah, definitely social media is blurring those boundaries. Certainly, I mean, I think I personally put out quite a lot on different social media and just always try to be authentic. And on that basis, then people can take what they will from it.
Exactly.
And we kind of go from there.
I think this word in this context, I think, and then especially in your context, I think is very real, is authentic. But also I find that's a word so misused these days, right? I mean, no matter who you speak to talks about authenticity, and it's a very powerful word. And I just feel it's being overused and misused at the moment.
Well, yeah, especially when there's so many people who are portraying supposed authenticity, but yes, they're absolutely not. I think, yes, that's the bottom line. Kunal, I think we have run out of time now. I really want to appreciate to you for speaking with me today on the podcast. I really appreciate sharing all of your insights across all the different areas of your life and professional career. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gordon. Thanks for having me. I hope I was fluid enough. I felt I was pretty stiff initially. This was my first podcast, but no, it's been enjoyable. You definitely made me feel comfortable as the podcast went on.
I don't think you were stiff at all. I think you provided us with a very colorful range of answers. And like I said, the first guest to actually give us a quote like that. So that's good that you achieved a guest first on the show. So yeah, thanks again.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
And everybody, thanks for listening and watching to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it and have some great takeaways. If you are not yet subscribed, please do follow us. We're available on all the major podcast platforms and also via video on YouTube. Just look up Get Stuff Done Gordon and you can find the podcast, which is the Get Stuff Done podcast. And remember, let's get stuff done.
Hi, this is Gordon from the Get Stuff Done podcast. Thank you so much for watching and listening. We will continue to bring you guests from a wide, diverse background and sectors to share with you insights about their leadership, their career experience, what it takes to get stuff done, and how they go about achieving all that they want to do in their professional careers. Once again, thank you for watching, and please do subscribe on all of the podcast platforms that we are available on. It will be greatly appreciated. Thank you so much.